Hello everyone and welcome to Really Old Movies. I'm your host Harrison Scullin, and today with my very special guest, the Rogue Critic, we'll be discussing The Lady from Shanghai from 1947, starring Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth. How's it going?
I'm doing great, Harrison. Thanks again for having me on.
Of course. Yeah, and before we get started, why don't you kind of introduce yourself again to the audience who may not know who you are?
Sure. So I'm just a guy that has a Letterboxd account, loves watching old movies and putting my thoughts up on there. Nothing too fancy or anything. I started looking on YouTube for others that have those similar interests, found guys like yourself on there too, so it's been good to just delve into old classics and see all the good stuff there, and to hop on here and discuss them with you guys like you. So it's going good.
Yeah, well, and thanks again for coming on. And the last time we had you on, we talked about The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and that was a great film and great time as well.
Love it. One of the best westerns out there. Yeah,
absolutely. And so if you haven't checked that one out, I recommend watching that one. We had a great time and discussion with that one. And so with that, though, now we'll talk about The Lady from Shanghai. And before we get started, what are some of your initial impressions or thoughts on the film, The Lady from Shanghai?
Yeah, as in contrast to Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, this one, not as much of a fan of. Interestingly enough, I love film noir. This is a film, you know, in that category, that whole genre, you know, whether it's Double Indemnity, Out of the Past, you name it, all those, Mildred Pierce, just love the genre because of its, you know, rich drama and storytelling and all that. This one does definitely have a lot of those features, you know, the femme fatale, all those things. But, and I also love Orson Welles. Citizen Kane, Touch of Evil.
Oh, yeah.
Stranger, absolute masterpieces. This one is one of those in his filmography that I think was a little bit of a swing and a miss, in my opinion. So we'll delve into the details on it, though.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and on that note, I'll kind of talk about some behind-the-scenes details about the film. Now, it's from IMDb, so we'll see how reliable that is, right? But I just still think they're interesting anyway. So from there, according to Orson Welles, this film grew out of an act of pure desperation. His company, Mercury Theater, was trying to produce a musical version of Around the World in 80 Days, and they are in desperate need of money before the preview. So mere hours before the show was due to open, the costumes had been impounded, and unless Welles came up with $55,000 to pay his debts, they would have to cancel all of it. And so they stumbled upon a book called If I Die Before I Wake, which is the novel that this film is based on. And so he phoned Harry Cohn, who's the producer, instructing him to buy the rights and then offering to write, direct, and star in the film. And so long as Cohn would send $55,000 to the debtors. So that's the only reason why this movie even exists.
Wow, I didn't even know that. It's a little, you know, some interesting nefarious behind the scenes details. I don't know that maybe gotten to how, you know, Orson Welles directed it a little under the gun, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, because you hear about his other films too. He always struggled getting financing.
That's true, yeah.
Like, what was it? Inherit the Wind? I never saw it because it looked pretty bad. But like, that took 40 years to make because he never had the financing. He died before it was done, so.
Yeah, and even, you know, studio interference, it's not one of his masterpieces, but pretty good one, Magnificent Ambersons. I think it was the one made right after Citizen Kane. Same thing, just kind of production wise a uphill battle for him. So
yeah,
Orson Welles had a hard directing life.
He did. You know, I don't remember the exact quote, but I remember him saying something to the effect of, he peaked at Citizen Kane, his first film, and then it just went downhill after that. It was kind of the opposite of the normal story. Yeah.
I'd say he had some peaks in there. Absolutely. You know, like Touch of Evil. That was later though.
Yeah.
I like Stranger, The Stranger. I think there's like one or two more, but yeah, it's Citizen Kane is just the Mount Everest of his filmography.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's see. And then another detail, kind of speaking about this production, Columbia Pictures boss Harry Cohn, who I was mentioning earlier, he told Orson Welles he would never again hire one man to produce, direct, and act because he can never fire that person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a smart businessman. That's true. Yeah. Orson Welles did it all.
Yeah. Quite the jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And then lastly, the aquarium scene in the film, the tanks were shot separately with enlarged and matted in backgrounds to make them look huge and monstrous. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but the sharks were ginormous.
Yeah. I did notice that there was a couple of those kind of shots. I was trying to figure out what it was because it wasn't like green screen back then, but
right.
Interesting. Those like matte paintings. Okay. Clever.
Yeah. All right. So with that, now we could kind of get into our thoughts on the film itself. So since you're our special guest, why don't you kind of talk about your thoughts on the plot on a scale of 1 to 5?
Yeah. So again, not my favorite in Welles' discography, filmography rather. Really in terms of plot and storytelling, that's for me, you know, narrative filmmaking, that's what you have to do well in. You know, you can maybe have a moment or two of clunky acting, or maybe the cinematography is the best or something like that. But if your story's really bad, then so is the film. I think it, in the case of Lady from Shanghai, it's a little bit in that kind of category of things, in that I think Welles, maybe coming off Citizen Kane and those other films, he kind of, it seems, was focusing more on other aspects rather than the story.
Mm-hmm.
So plot-wise, it was, to me, kind of confusing. I guess the overall driving narrative, you know, that this random Irish sailor guy gets caught up in this whole, you know, backstabbing of his boss, and is he going to murder, has he done, you know, that whole thing. I guess that's kind of clear. But in the execution of that, in terms of the plot itself, it's really just, I was just confused a whole lot. Like, what's his motive? What's going on?
Yeah.
What is this twist? Where did that come from? This kind of connects to, you know, as a protagonist, he wasn't really driving the story, Welles' character. He was just kind of floating along as it was going through. And especially, you know, at the beginning, he's literally just walking around and just jumps in there. So it kind of just, the drama of the story, that's all of it just kind of happens, rather than, you know, the story getting some background in the characters at first, and then it develops, and then this plot point comes in, it's getting established, you know, some general, even logic and flow.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little confusing and random and just kind of all over the place, in my opinion. There was also, you know, kind of a handful of plot conveniences and, again, plot twists just kind of coming out of nowhere. So,
yeah,
it's pretty low. I'd have to give it, I think I gave it a 0.5 or a 1, whichever the lowest one is. I guess that's why the title, you know, it's a rogue critic, and that it can be a little harsh. But again, story, if you mess up a story for me, I just can't do it. So I got to give it whatever, a 0.5 or a 1 on the scale.
Nice. All right. Well, I'm not going to disagree with you too much there. I gave it a 3 out of 5. I kind of liked the twist ending with her being the real villain, but I feel like it was kind of wasted because they weren't really hinting at it or building up to it. Right. It kind of felt like you were saying, kind of out of nowhere and kind of convenient, right? And I also don't like that she pretty much just dies immediately, right? As soon as we figure out, oh, now she's dead. It's like, well, now she doesn't face any consequences. Like, what is the point of this?
Yep.
And then what else? I like the court scene. That was probably one of the better scenes of the film. But I think the ones where they're like on the beach or on the boat were just really, really odd and strange.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll kind of talk a little bit later about that, but I think it's due to just the way it was edited. It was like weird jump cuts and juxtaposition, I thought was really strange. And then, kind of like you were saying about Will's character being the protagonist, there's no one to really root for, no one to really follow along with, you know, like, like you were saying, like there's no hero per se. And compared to his other films, like Touch of Evil, that's my favorite Orson Welles film.
Love it.
I think it's his best one. There's no characters we want to connect with or want to succeed in this movie. Like everyone else, it's like, I don't really care if he gets on the boat or doesn't stay, you know, like there's no real care in any of these characters, I think.
Yeah, that's 100%. And I mean, it's a great comparison. The, I forgot his name in Touch of Evil, but like Charlton Heston's character, like he's a convincing protagonist, but also you sympathize with him. Like you want him to succeed. You want him to win. In this scenario with Welles' character is just like, I don't care. The rest of them. Yeah. Same. It's just like they can live or die.
Right. Exactly. And it doesn't really have an effect at the end of the day, either way too. Right. So yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to acting. What are your thoughts on the acting?
Yeah. I'd say that Welles' character in terms of his acting was probably, I guess, the best out of the whole cast, apart from, and this is most people, the accent is really...
Oh, yeah.
that's it's a rough Irish accent. I don't know why he chose to cast himself in that role. You know, it just doesn't work. But I mean, I guess in generally, if I had to choose someone that was, I guess, the best, maybe Orson Welles in that regard, apart from his accent. But just generally speaking, acting wise, it was kind of, there were times when it was fine. Like you mentioned, the court sequence at the very end, you know, the Hall of Mirrors, that whole thing, that was, it was okay acting, kind of passable. But just generally speaking, the characters and their acting, it was just kind of clunky and odd sometimes. I forgot the character's name, but initially the guy that was like asking Orson Welles' character to, you know, kill his boss, that whole thing. They're out like, on the cliff scene, and that was just, he was just acting weird, like creepy, weird, and unnatural. So it's just an example of, sometimes the acting, it was either okay, kind of average, passable, or just odd, odd acting. So score-wise, I think I gave it like a 1 or 2, something like that. Just, again, not horrendous every time, but still just a little below average.
Yeah. No, I agree too. I gave this one a 3 as well as like I did with the plot. To me, I actually liked Rita Hayworth's acting the best, but I do think she's wasted. I think they could have done a little bit more with her, like kind of showing a little bit into her cunningness and her being the real villain, I think would have been really, really cool. Everett Sloan, he plays her husband in this movie. He's really weird in this movie. He's like on crutches and stuff. I was like, ugh. I liked him in Citizen Kane. I thought he was fine there playing that character. He's a, I don't remember his name, but he's like the guy with glasses who's always with
he's
him.
He's like the Kane's like caretaker or something.
I thought he was great in that, but this, it was really strange. And then you mentioned that other guy too, who's trying to make this fake plot to kill himself. That guy was really strange too. Yeah. Everybody was just weird.
Right. And that's you can have weird characters in a film, obviously, but you have to portray them convincingly and not, it can't be just like out of nowhere weird and random, you know? And that was the case in my opinion here. They're just for no reason, just weird. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I wish there was somebody we could look to, like a protagonist that, like, well, at least he's kind of normal. Right. Because it seemed like everybody, even Welles, was weird too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just a bunch of weirdos trying to get money. Like, I don't like this.
Yep, exactly.
Trying to sail and all that. So.
Yep.
And I agree too. That Irish brogue was laughably bad. It was awful. I don't know why he did that. That was terrible.
It's probably one of, you know, you do a top 10 worst accents in film history. I think he's going to be somewhere on that list.
Absolutely. Yeah, because him being Irish doesn't add anything to it. That's he could have easily been American. Mm-hmm. He did not need to be Irish.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's already got a distinct voice. Why change it, you know? Like,
yeah. You're Orson Welles. You don't need to add anything else, right?
Yeah. Like, of all the people, you're fine, man.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's illustrative of a lot of the things in the film. It's just random, kind of out of the place things, whether it's acting or an accent that's like, why?
Yeah.
That's the question. So, yeah.
Now, I haven't read the book, and maybe it has more details about all of that, because that could be why all of this weird stuff has happened. But like you're saying, I think it's the execution wasn't quite there. All right. Well, since we're talking about him so much, how about we move on to directing? Thoughts on directing?
Yeah, directing-wise, again, it's... If we were just looking at direction, and if that included like cinematography, you know, the execution of that, my score would be a little bit higher, but that's a separate category. And so because of that, it's pretty low again, pretty critical. It's probably like a one for me. And the reason why is just kind of integrating all the elements of a film story and everything else. That's the job of the director. And I think this is an example of Orson Welles' complete opposite of Touch of Evil or Citizen Kane, where the different elements of the film, the story, the characters, the acting, they just, it's a mess. Mm-hmm. It's, again, like I mentioned, the story's often confusing, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just kind of all over the place with these characters, like we talked about, acting, same thing. So yeah, it's just jumbles all over the place. And so yeah, this is not, in my opinion, not one of Welles' shining moments as a director. And it's interesting, you brought up that history, you know, the background of the production. I didn't know that perhaps that influenced a little bit of the mess that the direction-wise, I think it was. So
yeah. No, I, you're probably right about that too. And you know, I'm thinking that as well, because it kind of makes sense why it was so bad. No one really wanted to do it. They're just doing it to help fund their stage productions, which is probably seems what he really wanted to focus on. I gave it a 2 out of 5. You know, so many of the choices were so strange. Like I mentioned, the editing was really jarring and strange. And it's almost like, you ever see The Room, Tommy Wiseau?
I've heard of it though. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it personally, but just reading the behind the scenes of that, how he did everything in the steps of production, kind of shows that sometimes that works, like in Citizen Kane with Welles, but sometimes it doesn't. Like, yeah. Like with The Room, where so full of himself or trouble production or whatever it is, leads to kind of the downfall of the whole film altogether.
Right.
And so, yeah, I hated that so much. It's just so weird. You know, other movies like Gilda, I don't know if you've seen that one or not. Yep. With Rita Hayworth. I really liked that one because even though the characters are kind of bad guys, they're still charming enough that you want to root for them.
Sure.
Yep. Whereas in this one, like we keep saying, there's no one to root for, no one you really want to champion to succeed. And again, I have to blame Welles because he did everything, you know, he did the acting, writing, producing, all of it. So yeah, no, he could have done better. He's done better.
Right. Yeah. I think Welles, he's one of those directors that has some high highs, but, you know, some low lows. What is it? There's a film, I haven't seen it in a long time, but he did one, I think in the 50s, called The Trial. And it's really one of those avant-garde kind of artsy, kind of, that one is... It's an illustration of, yeah, he can go pretty low in terms of quality of filmmaking. This one's, it's not the worst thing he's done, but yeah, it's, it shows he's kind of on both sides of the spectrum. Some great films, but yikes, some not so great ones.
Yeah. And it could be too, because he's so focused on the craft that he kind of forgets telling a good story, you know?
Right.
I mean, just so focused on, okay, we got to do this crazy scene with the mirrors and all that. We got to do all this and that. But does it work? You know, does it actually string together?
Yep. Great point.
Yeah. And you read too about the production that people were confused what they were going to be doing every day, because he'd be rewriting that day what the scenes were going to be.
Wow.
Sometimes that works, but more often than not, it doesn't. It does not work. Mm-hmm. Just have a set script and you're fine.
Yep.
So, all right. Let's move on to cinematography / special effects. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like I mentioned, out of all the aspects of this film, I would say this is probably the, I guess, the best. Not certainly anywhere near as in the level of a Citizen Kane, a Touch of Evil, you name it. Or even one of, again, like The Stranger, which is much smaller and all that production-wise. But still, it's, I, you know, as I was watching it, you could notice, yeah, this is Orson Welles, his direction, his cinematography, how he, you know, puts together a shot. You know, you could see sometimes the deep focus shots or these like long tracking shots and going through. That was pretty advanced for the time. And again, if you compare it to Citizen Kane or really so many of his other films that are like real masterpieces, it doesn't, they're not in the same category, but still, you know, in all fairness, we'll say this one, I think I gave it a 3 for cinematography wise. It's got some good touches. And again, even the mirror sequence and that whole, he's going through that fun house or whatever. It's classic for a reason. I mean, it's pretty impressive stuff. And if I'm going to, again, be generous thinking, you know, that how he frames the characters, and you can see the different mirrors, you know, all the different shots of the same people reflected, you can kind of maybe think, oh, it's like the characters, they have duplicit motives and they're different people, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe he was thinking of that. It's pretty good in terms of visuals there. So I gave it about a 3 or 4.
Nice. All right. Well, I gave it a 4 out of 5. This, for me too, is probably the highlight of the film. I do think the editing does ruin some of the scenes, but I still love that mirror scene. I think that was probably the best scene in the whole movie. It was incredible. But again, it's a little rushed. I think it's the jumpy editing where it kind of feels like those Jason Bourne movies where it's just do, you know.
Right.
Too much for me. I like kind of long, drawn out sequences. It's kind of missing some of that. I don't like the boat scenes. I think it's really weird and really jarring. But it definitely is the highlight, and it definitely is a strength of Orson Welles. Because if you watch, like you were mentioning, Touch of Evil and Citizen Kane, you know, like in those ones, they have interesting camera angles. Like in Citizen Kane, they're like shooting up towards the ceiling, so you can actually see a ceiling. Or in Touch of Evil, we're actually in the back of a car as they're talking and driving. Like, it's really creative stuff. But this one, the most creative is like a, what, 2 minute, if that long, sequence of mirrors crashing and breaking. Like, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's pretty much what this film is known for. I mean, if it didn't have that, it'd probably be kind of like some other films in Welles' discography, kind of like Macbeth. I think he did one of those, just kind of forgotten, just there. Yeah. So, yeah. One other thing I was just thinking of too, and this is also, it's in other films of Welles, but I don't know if you've noticed, like, this is more audio, but like sometimes when the characters talk, it's almost like the audio is like behind or in front of their voice a little bit. So it's not like Sergio Leone film where they're like talking kind of in another language, but they dub English over it.
Right.
It's not like that level, but sometimes the audio to visual, like the way the characters, their mouths are moving, it kind of doesn't match up sometimes. So that's in some of his other films too. So I won't knock it too much, but I noticed that as well.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that. I'm thinking of in like Citizen Kane when, so I don't remember who it is. I think it's one of the newspaper guys calling out to Kane. You hear him talking, but his lips aren't moving. And then it cuts into his face and he's still talking from that same audio. So no, I think you're right. Like sometimes it doesn't work. It's a lot of ADR or whatever it is. Didn't quite match it up right.
Yeah.
But I think that goes to how Welles was, you know, he was kind of like a maverick filmmaker, they say, where he didn't try to follow traditional methods so much. So I imagine it's like back of his mind type of a thing, not something he really thought about too much.
Yeah, it could be.
So, or he's just focused on his stage play. Who knows?
Yeah, it all comes back to that whole mess, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the music for the film.
Yeah, this one is kind of like most classic films. That wasn't like a major feature. It was something kind of tacked on a lot of the time. So nothing bad, nothing amazing, though. Kind of just average, did the job. You know, in dramatic moments, it would spike with some dramatic theme or whatever. So nothing bad, nothing amazing, though. So kind of average, 3.5 for me.
All right.
Three.
Nice. Well, I'm actually going to disagree with you there. I give it a 1 out of 5.
Okay. Hey. See, I can't be the guy that's given all the bad scores.
We've got to right. That's right. We got to deviate a little bit here.
Yeah.
To me, you know, to remind myself, because it's kind of forgettable too, I went onto YouTube and found some of the scenes from the movie where it had a lot of music. And it doesn't fit the tone. It feels kind of like happy romantic music. This is like a dark film noir. It's like, this doesn't fit.
Sure, yeah.
This doesn't work. And then, Rita Hayworth, she sings. I think it was dubbed because...
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. I didn't like the song that her character was singing either. And I don't like the singing voice for it either. I don't think it fit very well. And yeah, I was kind of disappointed with the music in this.
Sure.
But then if you watch, like I just reviewed The Third Man, for example, I don't like the music, but it's memorable.
Very like, true.
I still remember it, right? Mm-hmm. Music in this, I'm like, I couldn't tell it from The Stranger, you know, another film noir of that era either. You know, it's pretty generic.
Yep, forgettable.
Mm-hmm. But then, like, even Citizen Kane doesn't have very memorable music either. But like you're saying, they're kind of tacked on. It wasn't as important as it is now. But
yeah,
I don't know.
No, but you're right. Now that I, you know, think back a little bit more, the singing sequence was, it's again, one of those things that just kind of randomly pops up. It's like, why? And it's not even done that well. So I agree.
Yeah. And continuing on the production of it, people were thinking maybe that's because the year before was Gilda and she was really, really popular in that movie. She's singing that. So maybe that's why. Who knows?
Kind of riding the wave on that, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't the same person who dubbed it in the other one. So it doesn't match.
A lot more believable there. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to kind of tallying up our scores. What does that bring your Letterboxd score to?
Yeah, I kind of gave, maybe this is a 1 to 2, 0.5, 3, that kind of thing. So kind of in the range. I think on my Letterboxd, I gave it 1 star. So I guess it's probably a 1 for me, maybe a 1 or 2 on this one for me. Again, not a big fan. I love film noir. There's so many great film noirs out there. But like I mentioned, he's got a lot of peaks, but whole ton of valleys of lows, and this is one of them in my opinion. So it's a low 1, maybe, if I'm being super generous, maybe a 1.5.
Right. Well, there you go. Well, my Letterboxd score goes to a 2.6, and it's just barely a 3 out of 5 for, okay, for me. If it was a 2.5, I would have just kept it as a 2.5. So would I recommend this? No. I think Touch of Evil and Citizen Kane are better Orson Welles films. And then film noir wise, I think Gilda is a much better film. I think Touch of Evil again, and you're mentioning Double Indemnity. That's a great one. There's other ones that I think are better. Special Double Indemnity is kind of a similar story where a wife's kind of trying to kill her husband. I think that's a much better film for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Out of the Past, Others Murder, My Sweet. Those are other film noirs. Very similar in terms of, you know, a femme fatale, you know, plot twist back and forth. The cinematography, different than the way Welles does his cinematography, but still, yeah, they're, I agree, better options out there.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, those are kind of our thoughts on, I forgot the name of the movie, Lady from Shanghai. I've been talking about other ones. I forgot about it.
It's a forgettable film. What can we say?
Right. Any last thoughts before we go?
Yeah, no, it's, again, classic film. It's just like any era of film. It's the golden age of Hollywood, but that doesn't mean everything was perfect. So it's good to, you know, watching old films like this to see that, hey, even with all the masterpieces out there, there were some duds. And no doubt in Welles' case, he learned from his mistakes, I guess. And he later on made a film like Touch of Evil. So it's just, it's good to watch these films nevertheless. Fun to watch them, even the ones that aren't so great. So thanks for having me on, Harrison, again. It's been fun.
Of course. Yeah, and why don't you kind of promote your channels and stuff before we go, too?
Yeah, sure. Just usually Letterboxd, put the movies I, you know, watch on occasion there. Twitter sometimes, you know, post stuff, interact with folks there. So that's where I'm at.
Awesome. Now I'll have links to both of those in the description below. Again, thank you so much for coming on again. I'll definitely have you on in the future for hopefully a better film. Like thank you all so much for watching and listening to today's episode. Make sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Really Old Movies, where I discuss details about the week's particular film. New episodes are released Saturdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And on YouTube, the video versions, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time as well. All right. Well, on that note, thank you so much for listening. This has been Really Old Movies. I'm your host, Harrison Scullin. This is my guest, The Road Critic. Take care.